Back in Jordan's suite, the conspirators watched in silence as Jordan handed the ruby to Prince Victor. It glowed with a somber crimson light until Victor closed his fist around it. He stood before the open fireplace and grinned broadly about him. Heather clung tightly to his arm, almost bursting with pride and happiness. Roderick's mood had mellowed, and Argent had actually been seen to smile briefly once or twice. Sir Gawain stood guard by the door, and though he watched the proceedings closely, his face gave away nothing at all. He'd stopped off on the way back to check that his wife was safe, and Roderick hadn't wanted to spare the time. Gawain had had to insist, and neither of them had been polite about it. Victor finally settled into his chair again, and Heather perched on the arm as before.
Well, get it working.
I'm just getting myself comfortable. All right. Open!
The air before them shimmered and grew vague, and King Malcolm was suddenly standing in the room. Jordan studied the image closely. Unlike the others, this was his first look at King Malcolm of Redheart. The king was tall and muscular and carried his regal robes well. His dark hair was shot with silver, but still thick and wavy. His eyes were silvery gray, like Gabrielle's, and he had the same harsh-boned face as Louis and Dominic. His gaze was sharp and commanding, and his mouth was a firm, flat line. He looked like someone who expected others to listen when he spoke.
If you're hearing this, then I am dead. I have no way of knowing how or when my death will occur, but I feel safe in assuming that the court is currently in a state approaching panic. He will have discovered by now that my crown and seal are missing. I have ordered them hidden. I assume you are here, William, as regent. I'm sorry for the trouble I've caused you, old friend, but I think you understand why it was necessary. According to custom, I should begin my will by declaring which of my sons is to inherit my position, my wealth, and my throne. I choose not to do so. It is my sad opinion that none of my sons is worthy to take my place as King of Redheart.
The dead king stood silently for a while, frowning unhappily. The conspirators looked at each other and at Victor, but nobody said anything.
Louis has become degenerate. For a time I thought he might follow in my footsteps and continue the conquests I began, but more and more it seems to me that he considers nothing important save the satisfying of his various hungers. Dominic has always been unstable. I had hoped his marriage to the Lady Elizabeth might settle him, but if anything, it seems her ambition has only fueled his madness. Of late, I fear Dominic has become dangerously insane. Were he not my youngest son, my last born, I would have had him killed years ago. After I lost faith in Louis, I placed all my hopes in Victor. He showed real promise. His only faults, those of youth and inexperience. But unfortunately, he too encountered the Lady Elizabeth, and she taught him, among other things, the pleasures of ambition and intrigue. Perhaps his time in Cahalimar will calm his hot blood, but I doubt it. He has already tried to kill Dominic, and no man who would murder his own brother over a lover's quarrel can be trusted with the throne of Redheart. It is time for new blood. I have therefore given instructions that in the event of my death, a trusted servant is to take my crown and seal and hide them where they will not easily be found. You, William, as regent, will be forced to proclaim the right of transference, and a new royal line will begin. This will inevitably mean a time of chaos, but that will pass, and Redheart will be the stronger for it. I have no regrets for what I have set in motion. More and more, it seems to me that I have done more harm than good in the kingdom which was entrusted to my keeping. Weep no tears at my passing. I am old and tired. I have seen my wife die and watched my sons grow to be monsters. I have no way of knowing who is listening to me now. It doesn't really matter. All I have left to say is that if you would find my crown and seal, you must look among those who have gone before. There, A final clue to help you on your way, whoever you are. Wear the crown proudly. Use its power wisely. And beware of the unreal. I am King Malcolm of Redheart. Hear my words.
The image of the king flickered and disappeared. For a long time, nobody said anything. Victor sat staring at the ruby in his hand. Finally, Roderick dredged up the courage to speak.
It's a good thing the steward did take the will and hide it. If this had been shown in open court, civil war would have broken out on the spot.
He called me a monster. I came all the way back here to avenge his murder, and what do I find? He'd rather some stranger wore the crown than me. I fought in his wars, bled in his battles, even accepted internal exile rather than risk a civil war, and all for what?
Victor.
Monsters.
He threw the ruby away from him.
King Malcolm has at least given us a clue. He said the crown and the seal lie among those who have gone before. Does that mean anything to you, Victor?
I don't want to talk about that now.
But darling, you must see that King Malcolm was speaking
metaphorically. I said I don't want to talk about it. Leave me, all of you. I don't want you around me for a while. No, wait. You can stay with me, actor. The rest of you, get out. I'll see you again in an hour.
Jordan looked at Gawain for some clues as to what to do, but the knight just shook his head slightly. Heather made as though she wanted to say something to him, but a glance at Victor's scowling face dissuaded her. Jordan was left alone with Prince Victor. Victor sat in silence for some time, staring into the fire. Jordan waited for an invitation to sit down, and when it didn't come, he sat down hesitantly in the chair opposite Victor. The quiet, crackling fire spread a pleasant warmth through the room, and despite everything, Jordan began to relax a little. What with one thing and another, this was pretty much the first chance he'd had to just sit down and take it easy since he entered Castle Midnight. Whatever else you could say about the place, it wasn't dull. Jordan stretched out his legs and surreptitiously studied the prince sitting opposite him. Victor looked a little better than he had, but his face was still pale and gaunt. The strain of his long illness showed in his sunken eyes and the tired, boneless slump of his body in the chair. Jordan sensed a basic confusion within the man, as though he was desperately searching for answers he wasn't sure were even there. Jordan tried to work out how he felt about Victor and wasn't surprised to discover he was feeling pretty confused himself. On the one hand, people seemed to agree that Victor had been the most promising of the three brothers before he'd met Elizabeth. But given the competition, that wasn't saying much. Sir Gawain had stood by him through thick and thin, but how much of that was down to personal loyalty and how much to the oath he'd sworn to King Malcolm? The Lady Heather seemed genuinely fond of Victor, but there was no doubt she was very ambitious and ruthless, not unlike the Lady Elizabeth, in fact. Victor didn't seem to be having much luck in his choice of women. He had tried to kill Dominic, which was a point in his favor, but in a stupid and amateurish way, which wasn't. Jordan kept working around the main issue, reluctant to face it head on. Catriona Taggart had given him King Malcolm's will because she believed his version of Prince Victor was worthy to be king. But was the real Victor worthy? And if not, what was he going to do about it? Victor glanced up from the fire and looked soberly at Jordan.